I'm Dorothy Wickenden. On today's Politics and More podcast, I'll talk with The New Yorker's Benjamin Wallace Wells about the Democratic primary season. In races across the country, the party's establishment struggles to come to terms with progressive candidates who are demanding change.
While it may be what's come to be called an off-year election, the anticipation for the 2018 midterms is building every day. Ben Wallace Wells has been writing about primary races across the country, and he sat down with The New Yorker's executive editor, Dorothy Wickenden, earlier this week to talk about what he's been seeing.
Ben, there are a lot of insurgent primary campaigns in the Democratic Party this cycle, but Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's bid against Joseph Crowley has gotten probably the most attention of all so far. Why is that, and how did she win?
I think part of it is something to do with more than tactics. There's a kind of romance around her. I think that, you know, Democrats have been looking for something to get excited about, somebody who suggests some possibility of the future. And for a time, at least, Ocasio-Cortez came to sort of embody that. She's 28. As of eight months ago, she was a bartender. She's an activist. She is Puerto Rican. I think a lot of it had to do with her district, which is half Hispanic and was represented by an older white man, Joseph Crowley. I think part of it also had to do with Crowley himself, who not only was, you know, fourth in the Democratic leadership in the House of Representatives in Washington, but was also the longtime chair of the Queens Democratic Party, and so had run a pretty traditional Democratic machine.
You know, we've seen her victory and then her quick embrace by the party afterward did repeat a pattern that we've seen since the middle of the Obama years, where the Democratic establishment quickly, you know, adopts left-wing protest movements from Occupy to Black Lives Matter, the Parkland students, you know, and on and on. And yet the establishment still is kind of holding firm. So Bernie Sanders did end up pushing Hillary Clinton to the left. Has Sanders and have these other sort of grassroots movements continued to push the party further left?
Yeah, I think further left even than they were at the end of 2016. One way to measure this is just to look at the kind of signal figures who you might say sort of represent the Clinton kind of wing of the establishment, the standard bearers, you know. You see Kirsten Gillibrand, the senator from New York, Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey, both figures with presidential ambitions themselves. And they've embraced not only, you know, Medicare for all, not only the $15 minimum wage, they've even gone so far as to support in tentative form a federal jobs guarantee, which is something that, you know, until very recently was pretty far out on the fringe of policy ideas. And part of the question is whether the grassroots will be satisfied with that, whether they'll think that is enough, or whether what they have in mind is sort of a broader change in who leads the party.
In New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo is being challenged by Cynthia Nixon, the Sex and the City actress, and that it poses real problems for him. So how is he dealing with her? Do you see substantive ways that Nixon's candidacy has changed how Cuomo's governing?
Yeah, I think on minimum wage, certainly. I think in kind of his embrace of unions and their priorities, there has been some substantive movement. It's worth noting that, you know, she's still down to Cuomo by 25, 30 points, depending on what poll you look at. So, you know, we're still looking at whether the kind of progressive ideas that, you know, moved through the Sanders campaign and very obviously animated the Ocasio-Cortez success, whether those will play in a broader stage right now.
Ocasio-Cortez and Nixon are part of this wave we keep hearing about of female candidates, many of them young and new to politics. Talk a little bit about the reasons for that and sort of how they're affecting the party overall.
You know, when you look at the landscape of candidates, there is undoubtedly a huge influx of women. You know, we've seen changes in the way campaign commercials run. early in the cycle, there was a spate of campaign commercials with women breastfeeding on camera to demonstrate their enthusiasm for family-friendly policies. You know, we've seen people talking about histories of their own personal abuse, female candidates, Democratic candidates, in campaign commercials. The fact of the Trump presidency, and I think, you know, now we're going to see with the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh for Supreme Court Justice, an increased emphasis, I think, on the threats to reproductive rights and particularly Roe versus Wade. Part of what we're seeing in primaries sort of again and again is a sharpening distinction between how women are voting and how men are voting.
There is also a broader generational change going on in the party. Tell us just a little bit about this tug in the party between bringing in the newer generation and sweeping out the old. Nancy Pelosi, there's a big battle going on about Nancy Pelosi's seat.
Yes, it does feel like in 10 years, maybe even 5 years, maybe even 1 year, the leadership of the Democratic Party is going to look both ideologically and in terms of who is leading it quite different. Just to have a party that is in a way that it hasn't been for at least a generation on policy, sort of a forthright progressive party, and yet at the same time have it still be dependent on, you know, a huge amount of campaign funding from billionaires and dependent therefore on the party leaders who can draw that money. There's an obvious tension and a problem there. It increasingly seems that, you know, even if Pelosi lasts and the leadership team around her lasts through this election, a bigger change is coming.
You know, I want to ask you about the Midwest, which is going to be key both in 2018 and 2020. Wisconsin seems like a really interesting way to examine what's going on as like a group of candidates who are taking on Governor Scott Walker.
Yeah, I mean, Wisconsin has an obvious historic and symbolic resonance. It's where the Tea Party Revolution and then the, you know, kind of Republican capitulation to that insurgency. It's where that whole sequence of events really got started. And so there are 10 candidates for governor, and not a single one has really emerged as a front runner. And so part of the idea that we had a year ago about this coming set of midterms was that this fight between the Clinton wing and the Sanders wing of the party would be won and lost, and that there would be a kind of clear view of what the Democratic Party was. That isn't really the case. You know, the party has definitely moved left on policy. It's not so clear that it has sort of toppled the powers that be. And in Wisconsin, I think you see a particularly clear case of that, where, you know, the party just isn't yet sure really like where it's going.
You've been to many parts of the country as you cover the midterm races. What do you find the issues are that voters are responding to? What should Democrats be focusing on?
I think that both core Democratic voters and people who Democrats want to sway want to think of what they are taking part in as a popular movement against conservative elites, you know, that there was this revolution in the country politically, but that things have not changed, that the basic dynamics of power have not shifted, that people's lives have not been improved. I think that's, you know, where the voters that Democrats want to win are. He's for the really rich guys. He's not for the poor guys. It was a lie all along.
Thank you so much, Ben.
Thanks, Dorothy. It's good to talk.
That was Ben Wallace Wells.